David really couldn't really control what Saul was doing, but David could control how he responded. And what does David do? Despite the attacks and the threats of Saul, despite the positions he's being put into, David behaves wisely. Can't always control what's coming against you, but you can control how you respond to those things. And David chose to respond rightly, behaving wisely, and the Lord was with him. Not much you can do to a man when the Lord is with him. You try to bring him down, but you'll just be fighting against the Lord. Saul is going to be experiencing just that. And in this case, David just became more adored by all Israel. You see, what Saul was intending for evil, God intended it for good. Turn it all around. First Samuel chapter 18. We're going to look to get into a couple chapters here tonight as we continue on just the story with David and Saul. And this is coming off of the heels of David having just a great victory over Goliath and what's transpired there and just some great things happening. Now, just give a bit of an overview as to what we're going to look at here tonight. Here's our summary statement. David begins to be publicly praised for his heroism and good character, while Saul grows jealous of David's accolades. It leads to Saul's attempts to take David's life. Notice that, attempts, plural, not singular. It highlights the struggle of faith against the backdrop of adversity and the necessity of relying on God when friends or leaders become threats. And that's what we're going to be looking at here tonight. Our outline, just to break this down a little bit, we're going to see David's rise in chapter 18. We're going to see Saul's rage, chapter 19, and in chapter 18 too, but just to break it up evenly, and then God's restriction, chapter 19 at the end there, verses 19 to 24. So look at David's rise with me a little bit. It says in verse 1 of 1 Samuel 18, "Now when he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Saul took him that day and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, even to his sword and his bow and his belt." So, like I said, following now the great victory that David's had over Goliath of chapter 17, remember, David is brought into Saul's court, where Saul's already been having David playing that worship before him here at different times. Previously, David was ministering in music, then would return back to his father's house periodically to feed the sheep before returning back to Saul. But now, we see in verse 2 here that David is remaining with Saul. Saul's seeing the value of David. And it's while he's ministering before Saul that he and Jonathan, which is Saul's son, begin to strike up this real special bond. In fact, it says that their souls were knit together. That's pretty significant, pretty deep. What's going on is a deep-seated love and admiration that these two had for each other. Now, you know, the whole LGBTQ plus squad has kind of hijacked this account and tried to make it more than it really was. They say that these two had a same-sex attraction for each other and entered into this kind of homosexual covenant with each other. Let me just set the record straight, all right? That is a completely erroneous interpretation here. That couldn't be further from the truth. See, what we see happening here with Jonathan and David is that these are two warriors. Jonathan, remember, is the guy that sees a Philistine garrison and says to his armor bearer, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised, and it may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing restrains the Lord from saving by many or by few." So Jonathan goes up and defeats these Philistines. And an incredible victory. This is the kind of guy that Jonathan is. And he, along with his armor bearer, they take out 20 Philistines. This guy's not backing down. He's ready to put it all on the line. But then in comes David to the court of the palace, and he's holding giant's head in his hands. David did what an entire army was unwilling to do. Jonathan suddenly sees a kindred spirit, another who's willing to put it all on the line. Jonathan's like, bro, you cut off a giant's head? Respect, man. Let's go on a hunting trip and eat some venison. That's kind of like what Jonathan is all about right now, right? That's just the original man crush going on here, but completely platonic, all right? It's all good. These are the two men who are looking to be men, get out in the outdoors and say, let's see what else we can slay, man. Let's go for it. That's what's going on, this kindred spirit that's linking them together. Now, again, these two are guys that are both married. David's going to commit adultery because he fell prey to the temptation of seeing a woman naked. That's not the conduct of somebody that's struggling with same-sex attraction, all right? So you can see it's a real stretch to make it anything but two men who had a deep admiration for each other. If you ever see somebody, and you'll see this coming from liberal churches and things that just completely remove themselves from the Word of God, try to tie something into this that isn't there. So be careful if ever you hear something like that. This is what's going on. Two guys that just have a deep respect for each other saying, man, all right, I think we can have a lot of fun hanging out together here and just doing manly kind of stuff. That's these two guys right here. Now, this love for David is evident in that there's no jealousy. There's no threat of David going on here. We'll see that Saul is going to be a guy that's going to become so just overridden with jealousy against David. But it wasn't the case for Jonathan. There's no inferior complex going on or anything like that. He loved him as an equal because he saw the similar courage and heart in David that Jonathan himself has already shown. Now, what's even more remarkable about this relationship is the fact that Jonathan should be the heir to the throne, right? He doesn't look to David with competitiveness. Instead, what does Jonathan do? He takes off his princely garments and he gives them over to David. Perhaps Jonathan has heard those words of Samuel to Saul saying, as he did in 1 Samuel 15, verse 28, the Lord has torn the kingdom from you today and has given it to a neighbor of yours who is better than you. Perhaps Jonathan has caught wind of exactly what Samuel said to Saul, realizing, hey, you know what? Looks like the kingdom's not going my way. I'm going to come alongside David and be in his corner here now. He recognized that and believes that David is that man, instead of fighting for position and prestige like his dad is going to be all about, Jonathan just surrenders it all over to David. Surrender is always the path to peace. There's a great lesson here for us, and that's surrender to the Lord. Because we can come and we can knit ourselves to him and ask the Lord to be our king and to reign our lives. Or you can continue to try to fight for control. One way is the way of frustration. The other is the way of freedom and fulfillment. As we, like Jonathan, come and say, you know what? My soul is knit to yours. I want your heart to be my heart. I'm going to surrender to you and allow you to truly be the king and to rule in my life. As followers of Christ, we're ultimately called to follow Jonathan's example and honor others before ourselves. Like what Romans 12:10 says, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor giving preference to one another. That's what we're called to do. Jonathan is exemplifying that in a very strong way when he lays down his own garments for David to say, David, I see you as more than just a musician in the court of Saul. I see you as the up-and-coming king that I'm freely, willingly surrendering over and giving preference to you. Well, continue on here in verse 5, we read this. So David went out wherever Saul sent him and behaved wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Now, it had happened as they were coming home when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistine that the woman had come out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. So the woman sang as they danced and said, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. Notice this, then Saul was very angry and the saying displeased him. And he said, they've ascribed to David 10,000s and to me they've ascribed only thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? So Saul eyed David from that day forward. Very interesting here. Speaking of submission, David was the guy that submitted quite freely to Saul. Notice what we read there in verse 5, that David went out wherever Saul sent him. Saul was like, David, I got a mission for you. David's like, all right, where do you need me? And he goes. He goes very submissively, very willingly. And notice, he behaved, it says, wisely. He behaved wisely. Get familiar with that, because we're going to see that coming up and being repeated here in chapter 18. David's not a guy that's acting bitter. He's not conniving. He's not grumbling or talking smack against Saul. He's just doing what he's asked to do in a way where people can't help but respect him. Notice it says that he was accepted in the sight of all the people there in verse 5. He's accepted in the sight of all the people. People are beginning to see the kind of character that David had. He's walking submissively to Saul. He is behaving wisely. He's got this great character to him, and people just can't help but respect him for that. And this is amazing, because again, in that submission to Saul, remember, David's already been told and anointed, you're gonna be the next king. And yet David's on sitting back going, Saul, listen, you can't boss me around. I'm the guy that's gonna be taking your position. He's not trying to usurp Saul by any means. He's willingly coming underneath his authority. He's still seeing Saul as God's anointed at this point. Even though David knows I'm gonna be the next king. He's not trying to usurp David. He's not trying to outclass him or anything like that. He's just simply going and serving Saul in all of this. Now, because of David behaving wisely, because of this character that David is showing, he's being promoted a high military rank, probably as a captain over a division of soldiers. Some translations say he was made a commander. Now, we know that Abner is the commander of the army. He's mentioned in chapter 17, verse 55. We'll see him mentioned again in chapter 26, verse 5, still as the commander of the army. So it's not that David has become the commander and Abner's been ousted. No, he's just having a position like a captain or a general, something like that. And it's easy to think that the only way for a person to really advance is to be cutthroat, especially when it seems to work that way with other people. Maybe you've been in a job or a position where it seems like those people that are being promoted and are advancing in their positions, it's those people that are just doing whatever it takes. Sometimes we can think, well, I guess that's the way. You just got to play the game here. Got to do whatever it takes. But yet, look at David, just being a gentle, submissive person of good character. And the Lord is the one that's promoting him ultimately. And that's what we need to rely on. Because it's not this way in God's economy where those that are cutthroat are going to get ahead. No, in fact, James 4:10 says, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord and he will lift you up. You want to be great in the kingdom of God? Be a servant of all, Jesus would say. David humbled himself and God lifted him up. And it'll be a number of years before David will actually take the throne as king. It's going to be upwards of 20 years. Years of waiting, trusting, escaping Saul's wrath, and letting God be the one that brings everything into place. But David is trusting God in all these things. Now, again, keep note of that phrase, he behaved wisely. We're going to see it repeated throughout the chapter. And it's meant to build this contrast now that we see between David and Saul. David is moving with skill and success as a servant, while Saul is moving in sin and spite as a jealous king to his own detriment. Now, we come upon a scene that would not have helped Saul one bit in this growing jealousy and animosity. And I love this scene that we see happening here. Women coming out to celebrate this great defeat over the Philistines, and they're playing their music and dancing in the streets. They're recognizing their king and saying that Saul has killed his thousands. He should have been happy with that. They're like, hey, they're acknowledging me. All right, I'll take that. But then they sing of David that he's slain his 10,000s. Now, understand something. These are figurative numbers here these women are giving. It could be certain translations like mine here says that they're singing about they're returning from the slaughter of the Philistine, meaning it's about Goliath and the defeat of Goliath, meaning a kill of one. Some translations say it's the Philistines, plural. So it could be that they're talking about Goliath Could be that they're talking about another defeat of an army, but most likely, these are very figure numbers that are being given. They're not meant to be comparisons. They're meant to celebrate this fact that there's been a great victory and that they're celebrating both Saul and David at having a hand in that. But Saul's not content with this. He wants all the accolades to himself, and he becomes very infuriated. The idea is that this kindled a fire inside him that caused him to burn with rage against David. This idea, when it says that this got him very angry, it's just this fire being lit now that just causes him to go into this rage. When it says that the saying displeased him, that's translated elsewhere as to do evil or to do wickedly. Saul saw this as a wicked act, kind of an evil thing that fired him up against David. And this is nothing more than jealousy getting the better of Saul. Saul's only thinking of himself and what he has to lose, not what he has to gain by having a guy like David at his side. He says, what more can he have but the kingdom? Saul's just looking at this as going, everything's just getting taken from me, rather than going, what a blessing this is to have a guy like David here. And he's been filled with jealousy and envy. Proverbs 14:30 says, a sound heart is life to the body, but envy is rottenness to the bones. Envy easily leads to anger, and anger is often the first step towards murder. We're going to see the progression of that taking place here in Saul's life. So from this point on, Saul is eyeing David, all right? That's what it says there at the end, at verse 9. So Saul eyed David from that day for that idea that he eyed David is that he's viewing him with suspicion. He's like just kind of not trusting David one bit. And he's just got this intention of doing evil against him. He's eyeing him suspiciously. He's just doing the old, you know, side eye, right? Like, what's this guy up to here? He's just watching him to ultimately do harm to him. Well, verse 10 goes on to say, and it happened on the next day, that the distressing spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied inside the house. So David played music with his hand as at other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand, and Saul cast the spear, for he said, I will pin David to the wall. But David escaped his presence twice. So after Saul now is bent on squashing David, notice he's eyeing him out of jealousy. Saul has this distressing spirit come upon him. We saw it happen in chapter 16, verse 14. Distressing spirit upon Saul. And it's one that you can go, what is happening? Especially when you read this distressing spirit from God or from the Lord came upon him. And that's not to say that the Lord is trying to, you know, bring evil into Saul's life, but rather he's permitting this kind of heart that Saul is leaning towards. And it's interesting to see the connection of Saul's thoughts to his actual spiritual state. See, when we begin to let a little poison in, we give an open door for Satan to have even more influence in our life. And what began as an open door turned into floodgates of demonic oppression and potential possession in the life of Saul here, as this distressing spirit comes upon him and just begins to distress him here. And it says he prophesied in the house. Now, why would a demonic spirit help Saul prophesy? It's actually a bad translation for this word. As Saul isn't so much prophesying the word of the Lord as he is kind of babbling on like a madman at this point. Now, what's cool is we see here in verse 10, at the end of verse 10, so David played music with his hand. And then we see in verse 7 that in Saul's hand is a spear. It's the tale of two kings here. One on the way up, one on the way down. In one's hand, we see an instrument of worship. And in the other's hand, there's an instrument of war. The instrument of worship for helping and serving, the instrument of war for hurting, killing. That's how you can oftentimes discover those who are moving up or moving down by what they're holding in their hand. Because these two were both anointed, but are walking in two very different directions. Saul was looking to throw the spear in desperation to drag people down with him, but David in humility just worshiped the Lord and looked to dodge the spears without flinging any back. Tale of two kings right here. And that's the question we'll have to ask is, what is in our hand? Are we looking to destroy or are we looking to build up? Are we looking to serve and worship the Lord or are we looking to devour other lives? Well, notice that David, it says at the end of verse 7, escaped his presence twice. It would seem that this is something David was getting a little bit accustomed to. It says in the first time it's happened, he's had to avoid the spear on another occasion. He's becoming very accustomed to flying spears whenever Saul's around. So he's dodging them. God is with them. It says in verse 12, now Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. Therefore, Saul removed him from his presence and made him his captain over 1,000. And he went out and came in before the people. And David behaved wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Therefore, verse 15, when Saul saw that he behaved very wisely, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. Saul's promotion to David, again, looks like Saul is blessing David. But there's a hidden agenda here. Saul is really hoping that David is going to be thrust into a position in battle, having to go out now and fight against the Philistines and die in battle. That's what Saul is desiring here. That's what he's hoping for. But we see those familiar words again. David behaved wisely. And notice the outcome of that. And the Lord was with him. The Lord was with him. Right there in verse 14. David really couldn't really control what Saul was doing, but David could control how he responded. And what does David do? Despite the attacks and the threats of Saul, despite the positions he's being put into, David behaves wisely. Can't always control what's coming against you, but you can control how you respond to those things. And David chose to respond rightly, behaving wisely, and the Lord was with him. Not much you can do to a man when the Lord is with him. You try to bring him down, but you'll just be fighting against the Lord. Saul is going to be experiencing just that. And in this case, David just became more adored by all Israel. See, what Saul was intending for evil, God intended it for good. Turned it all around to be in his benefit. Well, verse 17. Then Saul said to David, here's my older daughter, Merab. I will give her to you as a wife. Only be valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. For Saul thought, let my hand not be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him. So David said to Saul, who am I and what is my life for my father's family in Israel that I should be son-in-law to the king? But it happened at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David that she was given to Adriel the Meholathite as a wife. So Saul attempts now to give his oldest daughter to David as a wife. This is something that should have already been kind of a done deal because remember what Saul promised to those that went out and defeated Goliath? He's going to give him his daughter in marriage and exempt the family from any taxes. And so these are things that are already promised, but apparently Saul's not been honoring his end of the deal. Now, it was customary in this day for the groom's father to pay a bride price, a dowry, kind of an advanced alimony if anything went sour in the marriage. And Saul, in this account, seems to be kind of waiving that. He's not issuing any kind of dowry price, but he says, all you got to do is just fight for me here. I'll give her to you as wife, verse 17, only be valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. And notice Saul thought, let my hand not be against him, let the hand of the Philistines be against him. Saul's going, hey, you know what? Let me give you my wife in marriage. I'm not even going to ask for a dowry. All you got to do is just, man, be on the, again, just go out, fight the battles, be on the front lines. And Saul's thinking, oh, this guy's not going to survive, man. He's going to be toast. It's all going to be taken care of. Now, and David noticed this. He's not jumping at the chance of marrying into royalty. That for a lot of people would have been like, man, this is amazing. I get to marry into royalty. This is going to really help me in my life, just cause me to just have everything provided for. But David is just kind of even backing away from this. He's like, who am I? And my family, he's recognizing the humble background of his family. And he's thinking, man, we're not even worthy of this. This is something he's not even considering now, marrying the king's daughter. Now, maybe he's saying this because Merab was a piece of work. Maybe David's going, man, I've seen your daughter, and I'm not interested. I'm just fine avoiding that problem right there. He already knows Saul's a piece of work, so he's like, I don't know if I want into this family, you know? Either way, she ends up getting married before David can take any action. But Saul has another daughter that seemed to be of more interest to David. She certainly was interested in him. Look at what we read in verse 20. Now, Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. And they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. So Saul said, I'll give her to him, that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore, Saul said to David a second time, you shall be my son-in-law today. Now, we're not sure how Saul thought that Michal, his daughter, would be a snare to David. We know from 2 Samuel chapter 6 that Michal had a problematic character that didn't agree with the way that David was responding when the ark was being brought back into Jerusalem. She wasn't, it seemed to be, in the same kind of alignment with God as David was. We'll see coming up here that there's perhaps an issue with idols even in the home. So perhaps Saul just knows his daughter's trouble. You know, look at who her father is, right? So Saul's probably going, she's just given time. She'll find a way to bring David down, right? I mean, that's a great way to think about your daughter, but that's Saul here for you, right? But we don't know exactly how that's going to go down or what Saul is exactly thinking, but he knows there's going to be options or opportunities for Michal to make his life quite miserable. And Saul also sees that this will provide an opportunity to get David in front of the Philistines again and bring their anger against him. How so? Well, look at what we read in verse 22. And Saul commanded his servants, communicate with David secretly and say, look, the king has delighted in you and all his servants love you. You just see again, just, you know, the lies and the deception of Saul here. He said, now therefore, become the king's son-in-law, verse 23. So Saul's servant spoke those words in the hearing of David, and David said, does it seem to you a light thing to be a king's son-in-law, seeing I'm a poor and lightly esteemed man? And the servants of Saul told him, saying, in this manner David spoke. Then Saul said, thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. So again, here's Saul just kind of conniving here. He's like, go and tell David, oh man, David, I would want nothing more than just to have you as my son-in-law. Oh man, you're just such an awesome guy. I delight in you. Everybody loves you. It would be my honor to have you as my son-in-law. Listen, I'm not even going to put a dowry out there. I'm going to free you up from that kind of expense. All you got to do, 100 foreskins of the Philistines. No big deal. Now, I think if I were David, I'd be going, maybe just run that dowry price by me. That might be a better option, actually. So what is that, actually? Just, you know, put it out there. Let's just see where that goes. But you see, Saul knows this would absolutely bring Philistine outrage against David. Not only would it be defiling to the Philistines, it would also bring great shame. Circumcision was the sign physically of the covenant for the Israelites. They were to be separate, cut off from the pagan practices of the foreign nations. So they were to cut off a piece of themselves and show their separation to the Lord. And all this circumcision talk is quite uncomfortable. I know, so let's move on. Let me just cut to the point here. Poor choice of words, I should. The point is, Saul figured this would be enough to cause the Philistines to take David out. He's not going to get through this task. No way. Well, look at verse 26. So when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to become the king's son-in-law. Now the days had not expired. Therefore, David arose and went, he and his men, and killed 200 men of the Philistines. And David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in full count to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. Then Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, as a wife. Thus Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was still more afraid of David. So Saul became David's enemy continually. Verse 30, then the princes of the Philistines went out to war. So it was, whenever they went out, that David behaved more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name became highly esteemed. Notice this here, everything that Saul is trying to do to take David out only made things worse for himself. Instead of accepting a real blessing and asset that David could be for him, he allowed himself to be filled with jealousy and anger against him, and now everything is compounding against him. And he now gets 200 foreskins dropped at his feet. I'm sure he wasn't expecting that. Now he's got to deal with this mess. Everything is just turning into a greater mess for Saul in trying to take David out. His daughter loves David. Saul recognizes that the Lord is with David. Everything Saul tries to do to end David's life only made his life more celebrated and appreciated by others. It says that his name, David's name, became highly esteemed. Everything Saul's trying to do is just causing everybody to go, man, this guy is amazing. We love David. This is the kind of guy that we can get behind, which is only infuriating Saul all the more in this jealousy and envy that he has towards him. Instead of receiving a son-in-law to partner with, Saul becomes his enemy to the day he dies. That's what we read there, that Saul became his enemy continually. Doesn't add anything for Saul, but only makes his life more miserable. Well, chapter 19, we go on to read here. Now Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants, and he shouted, "Kill David." But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted greatly in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, "My father, Saul, seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning and stay in a secret place and hide. And I'll go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. Then what I observe, I will tell you." Thus Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his works have been very good towards you." Verse 5, "For he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistine. And the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood to kill David without a cause?" So Saul heeded the voice of Jonathan. Saul swore, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be killed." Saul has tried to kill David himself. He's tried to have him killed by the Philistines. When either of those failed, he just comes out and blatantly asks someone, anyone, kill David. Tell all servants, please, somebody just take David out. But Jonathan goes on the defense of David and confronts his father, Saul. Now, this could have put Jonathan's life in jeopardy. Just think about that. Jonathan coming to David's aid and defense and telling his father, like, what are you doing here? What are you trying to do? You're coming against innocent blood here. You're killing David without a cause. And in which case, Saul's maybe going, I have cause. It's because I hate him. That's what Saul is thinking here, but it's not working here. Saul actually relents and makes an oath with his son that he will not kill David. Saul, however, is not a great keeper of promises, as we've already seen. And we read in verse 7, "Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these things. So Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. And there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines and struck them with a mighty blow, and they fled from him. Now the distressing spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand. And David, notice, is playing music with his hand. Then Saul sought to pin David to the wall with his spear, but he slipped away from Saul's presence, and he drove the spear into the wall. So David fled and escaped that night." So David has this very brief reunion with Saul. It's like, maybe we can make a go of this. Maybe there can be something that's going to be redeeming out of this. David went out to war and a great success once again. But as he's back in the palace playing music, Saul is overcome with that jealous rage once more. And the Lord permitted the spirit to plague Saul once again. Again, understand there's nothing evil with the Lord, nor does he commit evil, but sometimes he allows evil agents to carry out his purposes. We've seen that throughout God's word. That's the case again here. So Saul tries to take David's life for the third time now with that spear trying to take him out. This time David himself is out. He's like, I'm done. I'm not sticking around to see if I can dodge a fourth spear. I'm moving on. I'm not putting up with this any longer. And he leaves. Well, verse 7, Saul also sent messengers to David's house to watch him and to kill him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, if you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you're going to be killed. So Michal let David down through a window, and he went and fled and escaped. And Michal took an image and laid it in the bed, put a cover of goat's hair for his head, and covered it with clothes. So when Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, he is sick. Then Saul sent the messengers back to see David, saying, bring him up to me in the bed that I may kill him. I kind of find that funny. Like, the messenger's like, oh, he's sick. I'm sorry. We'll come back at a more convenient time to kill him. We're sorry. That was wrong of us to come at a time when he's not feeling well. We'll kill him when he's feeling much better. That will probably help a little bit here. Well, Saul sent the messengers back to see David, saying, bring him up to me in the bed that I may kill him. Verse 16, and when the messengers had come in, there was the image in the bed with a cover of goat's hair for his head. Then Saul said to Michal, why have you deceived me like this and sent my enemy away so that he has escaped? And Michal answered Saul. He said to me, let me go. Why should I kill you? So David fled and escaped and went to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and stayed in Naoth. So Saul, again, he's hunting David down, ready to go to great lengths to just end David's life. Filled with this rage, envy, jealousy, he's looking to shut David down. But like Jonathan, now Michal covers for David. Again, we get a little insight into who Michal is. Notice she puts an image in the bed pretending that to be David. Now, this image is in the Hebrew teraphim, and it speaks of a household idol used for worship. I think it's safe to say that this idol is not there because of David. David's a worshiper of God with a heart after God. I think this idol is there because this is something that's a part of Michal's life. We see later on she doesn't have a heart for the things of God as David does. Perhaps this is why Saul kind of knew, I think she's going to be a snare for David at some point in some way. Well, she stands before her father and she's making up a story that David threatened her life. She's not speaking the truth as Jonathan was. She's resorting to deception. Clearly, she's not trusting God in the way that David has been. So David, he flees to Ramah to see Samuel. Here's where we see now this third point in our outline, God's restriction. And God's restriction is in restricting those that are coming against his people, David specifically. Look at verse 19. Now it's told Saul, saying, take note, David is at Naoth in Ramah. Then Saul sent messengers to take David, and when they saw the group of prophets prophesying and Samuel standing as leader over them, the Spirit of God came upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied. And when Saul was told, he sent other messengers, and they prophesied likewise. Then Saul sent messengers again the third time, and they prophesied also. Then he also went to Ramah and came to the great well that is at Sheshu. So he asked and said, where are Samuel and David? And someone said, indeed, they're at Naoth and Ramah. So he went there to Naoth and Ramah. Then the Spirit of God was upon him also. And he went on and prophesied until he came to Naoth and Ramah. Verse 24, and he also stripped off his clothes and prophesied before Samuel in like manner, and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Therefore they say, is Saul also among the prophets? Now again, another very interesting scene unfolding before us here in this section of Scripture. Saul, again, has no concern that David is with Samuel. This would have brought enough fear for Saul previously, but now this fear that's driving him is irrational. And he's ready to take out David, even in front of Samuel. He doesn't care any longer. So he sends these groups of messengers, assassins, you could say. And they all end up, now as they go, they end up coming into this kind of school of the prophets that was there. And they walk in, they begin prophesying. And again, it's not that these men are having a conversion experience, but more so that God has shown his power over the situation and protecting David supernaturally. That's what's happening here. This is not these guys saying, oh my goodness, I've seen the light. All right, I give my life to the Lord. Let's prophesy. No, this is a supernatural overtaking of these men by the Spirit of God. Saul eventually himself goes, and he doesn't even get to the school of the prophets. It's while he's on the way that the Spirit comes upon him, and he begins to prophesy. Now again, it's important to remind ourselves, I think, that prophesying doesn't just encompass a foretelling of events. We oftentimes think of prophecies only being like you're prophesying of what is to come. Prophecy is really about just not foretelling, but more so forthtelling God's word and speaking forth God's truth. That's what many of the prophets were doing in Scripture. They were telling forth God's truth. And that's what perhaps Saul is doing here. Perhaps he's just speaking in a way where God is speaking through him. Perhaps he's just, again, babbling as we saw earlier. But what we see happening is Saul comes in now and he strips off his clothing. And it really pictures the fact that the throne and the kingdom has been stripped from him. Saul's laying naked. And again, not naked where there's like absolutely no clothes here, but where he's taken off his outer garments, his kingly garments. And again, it's to show this real shame. A man who had struggled with pride is having to swallow a lot of pride here in public humiliation. He's revealing now that, again, this kingdom has been stripped from him. He's been shamed because of the way that he's conducted his life, so far removed from walking in obedience to God. Humble yourself before God or face him having to do it for you. That's what Saul is experiencing here. The bottom line here is that God is stepping in supernaturally to prevent Saul from taking David's life. I find this so very cool. We serve an amazing God who we can trust with our lives. He's seeing all and he's in control of all. He's over all. He's bringing his plans and his purposes to fruition. Saul is going to be in this state now, it says, all day and all night, laying down naked all day and all night. It's giving David plenty of time to get up and escape from the clutches of Saul. Saul spent two chapters trying to kill David with spears, schemes, and soldiers, but God shut it all down with just one spirit-filled worship service. Bottom line, never bring a spear to a Holy Ghost fight. You're going to come up on the losing end every time. Well, listen, here's a few points to ponder here for us, just in closing. First of all, when God is with you, no weapon formed against you will prosper. Again, Saul threw spears, God blocked them. God sent assassins, God stopped them. God chased David, God put him down. God protects his people. You can trust him for that. Secondly, when spears fly, don't retaliate. Listen, David was a skilled warrior. That spear flies by him, sticks in the wall. David could have easily grabbed that, whoop, trolled around and flung it right back in Saul's direction and probably taken him out. He's a skilled warrior, but David doesn't retaliate. He walks away. We're better off when we leave things to the Lord. Thirdly, again, Saul held the spear, but David held that instrument of worship. What's in your hand and how are you using it for God? Fourthly, boy, there's a big theme in here. Jealousy destroys from within. Saul's downward spiral started with a song. Not a scandal, not a rebellion, just a song that he didn't like. Envy can turn small things into fatal things. Don't let envy and jealousy get a hold of you. And lastly, Jesus is our greater David. We must always come back to Jesus. Jesus, what do we see with him? He was envied by the religious Sauls of his day, schemed against, handed over to Gentiles. And yeah, he was pierced for us, yet he never threw a spear back. Because he absorbed the spear in our place, we can now live without fear under his protection and with our hands lifted up to him in worship. What a great God we serve. May we be reminded when we look at all these events in the Old Testament and stories that we see, we don't try to put ourselves into that position of the hero and say, we need to be like a David and act this. No, we need to look to Jesus, who is our greater than David, and see what he's done for us. And we come humbly, submissively to worship him and allow him to reign and rule in our lives.